content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with a few fun facts from history, and these are from AARP, the Bulletin. In 1698, a wild start, the first documented April Fool's prank took place in London. A clever Brit announced a special event at the Tower of London. See the lions washed. No such public cleansing of jungle cats was planned, but the announcement drew a crowd of rubes. In 1796, new jokes in the New World. The earliest recorded American April Fool's prank took place in Middletown, Connecticut, where a handbill promised a marketplace for fool's coats. It said sellers should bring coats of various colors, yellow to predominant, with lots of tin bells and tassels. So all of these have to do with April Fool's, which happens to be my birthday, actually. And April Fool's Day dates back over 400 years. It's even older than Thanksgiving. True, no joke. Which means that there have been lots of chances for good mischief. In 1974, an explosive prank when residents of Sitka, Alaska awoke to see smoke rising from Mount Edgecombe. Officials responded to a possible volcanic eruption. But really, a group of people had piled hundreds of tires and greasy rags in the crater and set them on fire and spray-painted April Fool on the snow. In 1980, a new meaning of hat hair. The magazine of the British Army reported that its guards' fur helmets needed trimming because the bear pelts were so thick the hair continued to grow. The London Daily Express reprinted the prank story as fact, perhaps because it suggested a bear hormone could be a baldness cure. In 1983, some meta mischief, when an Associated Press reporter asked Boston University history professor Joseph Boskin about the origins of April Fool's Day, he jokingly cited a fictitious King Kugel, the name inspired by a noodle dish. He was shocked that the reporter had run the gag as fact. In 1985, a false pitch. A pitcher who can hurl a baseball at 168 miles per hour? That's what writer George Plimpton claimed about supposed New York Mets prospect Sid Finch in Sports Illustrated. Fans fell for the gag, which some called the greatest April Fool's prank in sports history. And then in 2001, a groundbreaking hoax. For earth-shattering impact, few pranksters can beat the British DJs who said a replica Titanic could be seen from the cliffs of Beachy Head and East Sussex. Crowds flocked to view the made-up ship, and part of the fragile cliffs cracked and then later crumbled. And we have another one here on corporate cut-ups, how companies tease customers on April Fool's Day. Unfortunately, we've passed it for this year, but we can look forward to these next year, perhaps. 1998, Burger King took out a full page and an ad in USA Today explaining that Southpaws could order a hefty Whopper with condiments rotated 180 degrees, creating a left-handed taste. In 2015, Americans has spoken, and we at Cottonelle have listened, read an announcement for toilet paper for lefties. In 2019, Audi Australia announced 8 B-tron, a vehicle that runs on honey, a sustainable, naturally acquired fuel harvested from Robina flowers in Bavaria. The car was to include an onboard toaster for sweet morning treats. In 2019, McDonald's restaurants in Australia announced the McPickle Burger, juicy, flavorsome pickles layered between melted cheese, ketchup, and sauce, and toasted sesame seed buns. And finally, in 2023, KLM Dutch Royal Dutch Airlines unveiled a recline alert system, saying, "We've developed a sound effect that notifies passengers when the seat in front of them reclines." Now we have two questions for Dina Bunas under Medicare Made Easy. I've been using a health savings account, HSA, to cover costs not covered by the health insurance I've had through work. Can I do the same under Medicare? You can still use cash you've already put into your HSA to pay your share of Medicare out-of-pocket expenses, including your Medicare premium, deductibles, copays, and coinsurance. What you can't do is put new money into the HSA. For those not familiar, HSAs are offered by some employers, as well as some banks, credit unions, and insurance companies, to people with high deductible health plans as a way to accumulate money for when uncovered medical costs arise. You invest pre-tax dollars and they grow in the account until needed. Once you enroll in Medicare, you can no longer contribute to your HSA. Is it true that I can't use my Medicare Part D drug plan with a discount coupon provided by a drug maker? That's true. Under a federal law called the Anti-Kickback Statute, Medicare enrollees cannot use a manufacturer coupon along with their Part D prescription drug plan. The rationale? Federal officials say such coupons could be an incentive to use higher-priced brand-name medications that have coupons available instead of cheaper alternatives, therefore costing Medicare and taxpayers more money. Drug makers tend to take these coupons available for their newer and more expensive medications. However, you can use these coupons if you don't use your Part D plan to pay for your prescription. A few cautions. Medicare requires pharmacists to use your Part D plan when filling a prescription unless you tell them otherwise. Also, often these coupons have an expiration date and/or a maximum amount they will pay. So you might consider that, especially if you are likely to take the drug for a long time. If you're having trouble deciding which path to take for a particular medicine, consider getting your pharmacist advice. Now we're going to move to AARP, the magazine, and this is continuing with their cover article, which was Risk, How Much is Too Much for Your Money? And this is part two, the health risk, managing money when you're sick. Letting bills go unpaid during a medical crisis can create a financial crisis. Here's how to avoid that. Imagine a medical emergency knocks you out of commission for a few weeks or months. Paying your cable bill may not be high on your list of priorities. But the consequences of letting financial obligations fall by the wayside could make getting your life back to normal even harder. Missing a month or two of rent payments, credit card bills, and phone bills can expose you to penalty fees, unwanted interest payments, and worse. So, how can you avoid this? The right answer is not obvious. You could simply give instructions and passwords to a friend or relative, but that carries risks. And what if you're not in any condition to explain how you manage your money? Consider these steps to prepare for a health crisis with a minimum of hassle. 1. Create a list of chores. Start by writing down a comprehensive list of your regular bills, expected deposits, and any other information your helper would need to handle your day-to-day financial obligations for a period of up to 6 months. Which payments are on autopilot, and which do you write checks for? Where does the money to pay your bills come from? If your bills are on autopay, but your checking account isn't replenished, your payments will start bouncing. Next, assemble relevant account numbers, usernames, and passwords, and try to imagine any problems your helper might have accessing your accounts. Are they protected by two-factor authentication, meaning that logging in might require both a password and a one-time code texted to your phone? Clarity is important, says Stuart Springer, a senior wealth manager for City Personal Wealth Management based in Fresno, California. Especially when another person is probably upset and is dealing with a lot of other things. 2. Find the right person. Your next step, designate someone willing and able to handle the job. I've seen so many situations where people say, I have to name my oldest child, says Stacy Singer, National Practice Leader for Trust and Wealth Advisory Services at the Northern Trust Company in Chicago. Well, that's great, but make sure your oldest child is able to do it, has the time to do it, and is the kind of person who does those things well. If you don't have children, you can ask. You can try another family member, a friend or a professional, says Jay Zygmunt, founder of Child Free Wealth, a financial planning firm in Water Valley, Mississippi. For example, the American Association of Daily Money Managers, AADMM.com/find-A-DMM, lets you search for professionals who can handle your day-to-day finances on a short or long-term basis. Don't keep your choice a secret from others in your life. You don't want relatives panicking about your finances unnecessarily or arguing over who should manage your money. Also, be willing to revisit your decision. Someone perfectly positioned to help you now may not stay that way. Finally, let your designee know where to find the financial information you've prepared, say, in an envelope in your lower desk drawer. 3. Fill out the necessary forms. If you trust a friend or relative and you're out of commission for just a few weeks, realistically, you may not need much paperwork. With your permission, your backup can log in to your checking account, maybe sitting beside you, with your receiving one-time codes on your phone, and pay your bills, says New York elder law attorney Stuart H. Schoenfeld. If you write out paper checks, you would have to sign them yourself. Having someone call a creditor on your behalf might be more challenging. Financial services companies won't speak to someone without authorization, Schoenfeld says. But they might give you information if you get on the phone with your helper and say it's okay. He warns against letting someone impersonate you on the phone. If the credit card company ever figures it out, they will block access to the account, and it will be harder to address issues in the future, he says. Handling someone's finances without a power of attorney, POA, is a gray area, Schoenfeld says. Your helper should avoid any actions that could be construed as financial abuse, such as taking money out of your bank account. To cover your bases in case you're incommunicative or ill for an extended period of time, you should give your surrogate a durable POA, which grants legal permission to act on your behalf even if you're incapacitated. That gives the person much more latitude to handle your affairs. You can find free state-specific forms at freewill.com, lawdepot.com, and rocketlawyer.com. Warning, many financial institutions are picky about the POAs they will accept as valid. So while you're well, it's important to check with your bank or brokerage about its requirements. Now let's look at part 3, insurance, when worst-case scenarios come true. Umbrella insurance can protect your assets on occasions when auto and homeowners policies are not enough. If you have car insurance, you're likely covered for injuries you cause when you're driving. If you have a homeowner's policy, you're probably protected if someone slips on your steps. Isn't that enough insurance? Maybe not. The liability provisions in your policy, which compensate others for any harm caused by you or others in your household, typically cover a few hundred thousand dollars in damages, often up to $300,000. But you may need more protection than that. Financial planner Laura Mattia tells the story of a restaurant owner she knew who was sued by a customer over food poisoning. Because the owner had, unadvisedly, mixed together his business and personal finances, his family's assets, including his home and his savings, could have been lost to a damage award. To the rescue came the man's personal liability insurance, also known as umbrella insurance. It saved his home and most of his savings, says Mattia, CEO of Atlas Fiduciary Financial in Sarasota, Florida. Umbrella insurance, which protects you in case you're sued for damages, sits on top of other insurance. If, for example, you have an auto policy that covers you for up to $300,000 in liability and a homeowner's policy that does the same, an umbrella policy will supplement both those policies if the covered amounts are not enough to satisfy a judgment. Could you really end up liable for damages beyond those standard home and auto limits? Yes. Some possible scenarios. You crash your car, causing injury or death. Your dog attacks a neighbor. Or you engage in activities that can result in dangerous accidents, such as hunting, skiing, or boating. Such liabilities, though not common, can be costly. A trade group that provides umbrella insurance to CPAs, for example, reported that it has paid out an average of $957,000 on 43 claims over a five-year period. To determine how much umbrella insurance you might need, or whether you need it at all, add up the value of any assets you have to protect. A typical guideline is to get coverage for your net worth, the total of your money in the bank, the savings in your retirement accounts, and the equity in your home. Your 401k is generally protected from judgments. In some states, your primary home and other assets are shielded as well, so you might not need to include those in your calculations. If your net worth doesn't exceed the liability coverage in your car and homeowner's insurance umbrella coverage, need not be a big concern, but if you've amassed more wealth, you might want to buy a policy. The good news, umbrella insurance is relatively inexpensive. A $1 million policy, usually the smallest you can buy, costs a few hundred dollars a year. Additional coverage, such as a $2 million or $5 million policy, may not cost much more. Buying coverage, however, may mean you have to spend more on auto and homeowners insurance. Insurers require certain amounts of liability coverage on those policies as a condition of buying umbrella insurance. And because umbrella policies are focused on injury caused to others, they don't cover damage to your own property. If your house burns down, only your homeowner's policy will apply toward your personal losses. And you can guard against fraud. This is a sidebar. The AARP Fraud Watch Network can help you spot and avoid scams. Our website has the latest news from the fraud landscape tip sheets on the most common frauds today and a map where you can see what's being reported in your area. To access that, go to aarp.org/fraud watch network. That's Fraud Watch Network. Now let's look at seven things not to do to stay financially healthy. American households headed by someone 65 or older spend about $4,800 per month on average, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So splurging on a big-ticket item or dropping the ball on home maintenance chores can cost you a few months' worth of retirement funds. Watch out for these minor actions you might take or fail to take that can create major difficulties later on. Mistake number one, shower the people you love with money. It can be hard to tell relatives that you have to rein in your giving. Sit down with your family before there's a crisis and be honest about what aid you can give, says Lena Haas, head of Wealth Management Advice and Solutions at Edward Jones. Small course corrections can generate big benefits, she says. Mistake number two, delay decluttering. Are you paying $150 a month for a storage unit you haven't visited in years? When the cost of storing items outweighs their value, you need to think about getting rid of the stuff, says Los Angeles financial planner Patrick Whalen. It's best to start decluttering well before you downsize or relocate, which could save hundreds of dollars or more in moving costs. Number three, lap up the luxury. Before you spring for that European sports car or total kitchen makeover, calculate how much you'll need to live comfortably, including costs such as housing and health care. You can find retirement budget worksheets at Vanguard.com and TIAA.org. Perhaps with a more modest car, you can afford other treats and still have more money to keep on hand for your future. Number four, panic about investments. Maybe you're worried about a market crash, or maybe you want to catch a ride on a soaring stock. You might end up selling at a loss or taking disastrous risks. People tend to assume that what is going up or down will continue, said Meyer Statman, professor of finance at Santa Clara University and author of Finance for Normal People. But history shows no one can consistently predict the market. Use a two-week cooling-off period before you buy or sell, Statman says. Chances are the urge will have passed by then. Number five, skip your checkups. Preventive care is often free or low cost, and catching problems early can head off more expensive treatments later. Ask your doctor why a test he or she recommends is necessary, and learn while you're taking a medication, plus how long to take it, says Carolyn McClanahan, a financial planner and physician in Jacksonville, Florida. If you're an engaged patient, you can be better assured you're spending your health dollars wisely. Number six, pinch pennies on home maintenance. A bit of time and money spent on basic home maintenance tasks can prevent costly repair bills. For example, a gutter cleaning might cost $150 or more. Regrading around your foundation to avoid water runoff into your home could cost $1,000. But those steps will help reduce the risk of incurring thousands more in damage from leaks or basement flooding. And finally, mistake number seven, spend on autopilot. People surveyed by C+R Research in 2022 thought they were spending an average of $89 a month on subscriptions. But a review of their bills found the real cost $219 a month, mostly for streaming services. To keep better tabs on your subscriptions, you can use apps such as Pocket Guard and Rocket Money. Some credit card issuers, including Chase and Capital One, have tools for tracking subscriptions. Now we're going to start on a section called A Survival Guide for 50-plus Americans, How to Save Your Own Life. Professional wisdom for tackling 10 home and health emergencies when there's no one else around. Good or bad, by choice or not, more of us are living alone, some 27% of Americans 60 and older, according to the Pew Research Center. And being on your own inevitably means being more self-reliant. Sure, you may not be Tom Hanks in Castaway, having to perform your own dental surgery and relying on volleyball for companionship, but you might find yourself facing some real catastrophe at home without the immediate backup of a family member or roommate to help control the situation. We've identified some of the most familiar dangers facing people our age and consulted with health and safety professionals who gave us the inside scoop on how to handle these crises when there's no one nearby to help. You're having chest pains. Discomfort that lasts more than a few minutes or goes and comes back again, especially with activity, may signal a heart attack, says James B. Men, M.D. This can feel like a dull ache, uncomfortable pressure, chest fullness, or a squeezing sensation, he explains. Jaw pain, shoulder, back, or neck discomfort, nausea, and lightheadedness are also signs. So, call 911. Don't attempt to drive to the hospital, and don't have someone else drive you. After getting through to 911, describe your symptoms. Chest pains will get an ambulance racing to you immediately. Then you can dial a family member or friend to alert them to the situation. Pop an aspirin if you're not allergic to them, to get it into your bloodstream faster, chew or place one under your tongue, one 325 milligram aspirin or four 81 milligram baby aspirins. Aspirin, but no other painkillers, can help reduce clotting. If you have been advised not to take aspirin or have had bad reactions to it, ask the EMTs before taking it. Pull together your meds. It's important not to exert yourself, but if you have your list of meds and your ID and insurance card nearby, grab them. And then unlock your front door. If you can get to it, Hart suggests unlocking and opening your front door to ease the way for paramedics to enter. Sit down, preferably in a comfortable chair near the entrance of your home. Take slow, deep, calming breaths. The more you can control your natural instinct to panic, the better. There's a burglar in your house. It is rare for a criminal to enter a private home knowing someone is there. Burglars generally want to get in and out, but if you're at home, avoid confrontation. If you have a weapon of self-defense item, like a bat or pepper spray, arm yourself, but don't go looking for the intruder. That only puts you at greater risk of harm. Treat it like a fire. If you've developed a plan to escape your home in case of a fire, use that plan now. If you can't get out, hide. Don't go exploring the house or wandering around. Hide in a safe place with a door that can be locked and, if possible, barricaded. Call for help. If you can do so quietly, call 911. Say your name and address and that there's someone in your home. And then stay put until help arrives. Once you're in a safe place, don't move from that spot, even if you think the burglar may have left your home. Wait until police arrive and confirm that all is clear. Now we have time for just a couple of more did you knows about your brain. Did you know that sleep-deprived drivers have reaction time like those of drunk drivers? Did you know that about 30% of children will have at least one sleeping-walking episode? Did you know that disturbance during sleep can trigger a migraine attack? And that people taking prescription sleeping pills may gain only 11 minutes of sleep? And that the record time for a person going without sleep is 11 days. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.